19. Bang! A door slammed. In an attic, dust jumped off bureaus and bookcases. Two old women collapsed against the attic door, each scrabbling to lock it tight. A thousand pigeons seemed to have leaped off the roof right over their heads. They bent as if burdened, ducked under the drum of beating wings. Then they stopped, their mouths surprised. What they heard was only the pure sound of panic, their hearts in their chests. Above the uproar, they tried to make themselves heard.
"What we've done! Poor Mr. Quatermain!"
"We must have killed him, and someone must have seen and followed us. Look!"
Miss Fern and Miss Roberta peered from the cobwebbed attic window. Below, as if no great tragedy had occurred, the oaks and elms continued to grow in fresh sunlight. A boy strolled by on the sidewalk, turned, strolled by again, looking up. In the attic, the old women peered at each other, as if trying to see their faces in a running stream.
"The police!"
"But no one hammered the downstairs door and cried, 'In the name of the law.'
Who's that boy down there?"
Douglas Spaulding. Lord, he's come to ask for a ride in our green machine. He doesn't know. Our pride has ruined us. Pride and that electrical contraption.
That terrible salesman from Gumport Falls, it's all his fault. Him and his talking.
Talking, like soft rain on a summer roof.
Suddenly it was another day, another noon. They sat with their white fans and dishes of cool, trembling lime jello on their arbored porch. Out of the blinding glare, out of the yellow sun, glittering, splendid as a prince's coach. The green machine. It glided, it whispered an ocean breeze. Delicate as maple leaves, fresher than creek water, it purred with the majesty of cats prowling the noontide. In the machine, his Panama hat afloat in Vaseline above his ears, the salesman from Gumport Falls. The machine, with a rubber tread, soft, shrewd, whipped up their scalded white sidewalk, whirred to the lowest porch step, twirled, stopped. The salesman leaped out, blocked off the sun with his Panama. In this small shadow, his smile flashed.
"The name is William Tara, and this," he pinched a bulb, a seal barked, "is the horn." He lifted black satin cushions, storage batteries, a smell of lightning blew on the hot air, steering lever, footrest, overhead parasol. Here, in toto, is the green machine.
In the dark attic, the lady shuddered, remembering, eyes shut.
"Why didn't we stab him with our darning needles?"
"Shh, listen."
Someone knocked on the front door downstairs. After a time, the knocking stopped. They saw a woman cross the yard and enter the house next door.
"Only Lavinia Nebs. Come with an empty cup to borrow sugar, I guess. Hold me. I'm afraid."
They shut their eyes. The memory play began again. An old straw hat on an iron trunk was suddenly flourished, it seemed, by the man from Gumport Falls.
"Thanks, I will have some iced tea."
You could hear the cool liquid shock his stomach in the silence. Then he turned his gaze upon the old ladies like a doctor with a small light, looking into their eyes and nostrils and mouths.
"Ladies, I know you're both vigorous. You look it. 80 years, he snapped his fingers, "mean nothing to you. But there are times, mind, when you're so busy, you need a friend indeed, a friend in need. And that is the two-seater green machine."
He fixed his bright, stuffed fox, green-glass-eyed gaze upon that wonderful merchandise. It stood, smelling new, in the hot sunlight, waiting for them, a parlor chair comfortably put to wheels.
"Quiet as a swan's feather."
They felt him breathe softly in their faces. Listen. They listened. The storage batteries are fully charged and ready now. Listen. Not a tremor, not a sound. Electric, ladies. You recharge it every night in your garage.
It couldn't, that is... The younger sister gulped some iced tea. It couldn't electrocute us accidentally.
Perish the thought. He vaulted to the machine again, his teeth like those you saw in dental windows, alone grimacing at you as you passed by late at night.
Tea parties, he waltzed the runabout in a circle. Bridge clubs, soirees, galas, luncheons, birthday gatherings, D.A.R. breakfasts.
He purred away as if running off forever. He returned in a rubber-tired hush. Gold Star Mother's Suppers. He sat primly, corseted by his supple characterization of a woman.
Easy steering? Silent, elegant arrivals and departures? No license needed? On hot days, take the breeze.
Ah... He glided by the porch, head back, eyes closed deliciously, hair tousling in the wind, thus cleanly sliced through. He trudged reverently up the porch stairs, hat in hand, turning to gaze at the trial model as at the altar of a familiar church.
Ladies, he said softly, $25 down, $10 a month, for 2 years.
Fern was first down the steps onto the double seat. She sat apprehensively. Her hand itched. She raised it. She dared tweak the rubber bulb horn. A seal barked. Roberta on the porch screamed hilariously and leaned over the railing. The salesman joined their hilarity. He escorted the older sister down the steps, roaring, at the same time taking out his pen and searching in his straw hat for some piece of paper or other.
"And so we bought it," remembered Miss Roberta, in the attic, horrified at their nerve. "We should have been warned. Always did think it looked like a little car off the carnival roller coaster." "Well," said Fern defensively, "my hips bothered me for years, and you always get tired walking. It seemed so refined, so regal, like in the old days when women wore hoop skirts. They sailed. The green machine sailed so quietly."
Like an excursion boat, wonderfully easy to steer. A baton handle you twitched with your hand. So. Oh, that glorious and enchanted first week, the magical afternoons of golden light, humming through the shady town on a dreaming, timeless river, seated stiffly, smiling at passing acquaintances, sedately purring out their wrinkled claws at every turn, squeezing a hoarse cry from the black rubber horn at intersections, sometimes letting Douglas or Tom Spaulding or any of the other boys who trotted chatting alongside hitch a little ride. 15 slow and pleasurable miles an hour, top speed. They came and went through the summer sunlight and shadow, their faces freckled and stained by passing trees, going and coming like an ancient, wheeled vision.
"And then," whispered Fern, "this afternoon... Oh, this afternoon!" "It was an accident." "But we ran away, and that's criminal."
This noon, the smell of the leather cushions under their bodies, the gray perfume smell of their own sachets trailing back as they moved in their silent green machine through the small, languorous town. It happened quickly, rolling soft onto the sidewalk at noon, because the streets were blistering and fiery, and the only shade was under the lawn trees. They had glided to a blind corner, bulbing their throaty horn. Suddenly, like a jack-in-the-box, Mr. Quartermain had tottered from nowhere.
"Look out!"
screamed Miss Fern.
"Look out!" screamed Miss Roberta.
"Look out!" cried Mr. Quartermain.
The two women grabbed each other instead of the steering stick. There was a terrible thud. The green machine sailed on in the hot daylight, under the shady chestnut trees, past the ripening apple trees. Looking back only once, the two old ladies' eyes filled with faded horror. The old man lay on the sidewalk, silent.
"And here we are," mourned Miss Fern in the darkening attic. "Oh, why didn't we stop? Why did we run away?"
"Shh!" They both listened. The rapping downstairs came again. When it stopped, they saw a boy cross the lawn in the dim light. "Just Douglas Spaulding come for a ride again." They both sighed. The hours passed. The sun was going down. "We've been up here all afternoon," said Roberta tiredly. "We can't stay in the attic 3 weeks, hiding till everybody forgets."
"We'd starve."
"What'll we do then? Do you think anyone saw and followed us?" They looked at each other.
"No, nobody saw."
The town was silent, all the tiny houses putting on lights. There was a smell of watered grass and cooking suppers from below.
"Time to put on the meat," said Miss Fern. "Frank'll be coming home in 10 minutes. Do we dare go down? Frank could call the police if he found the house empty. That'd make things worse."
The sun went swiftly. Now they were the only two moving things in the musty blackness.
"Do you,"
wondered Miss Fern,
"think he's dead?"
"Mr. Quatermain?" A pause.
"Yes."
Roberta hesitated. "We'll check the evening paper." They opened the attic door and looked carefully at the steps leading down.
"Oh, if Frank hears about this, he'll take our green machine away from us. And it's so lovely and nice riding and getting the cool wind and seeing the town."
"We won't tell him."
"Won't we?"
They helped each other down the creaking stairs to the second floor, stopping to listen. In the kitchen they peered at the pantry, peeked out windows with frightened eyes, and finally set to work frying hamburger on the stove. After 5 minutes of working silence, Fern looked sadly over at Roberta and said,
"I've been thinking. We're old and feeble and don't like to admit it. We're dangerous. We owe a debt to society for running off."
"And?" A kind of silence fell on the frying in the kitchen as the two sisters faced each other, nothing in their hands.
"I think that,"
Fern stared at the wall for a long time,
"we shouldn't drive the green machine ever again."
Roberta picked up a plate and held it in her thin hand.
"Not ever?"
she said.
"No."
"But," said Roberta, "we don't have to get rid of it, do we? We can keep it, can't we?" Fern considered this.
"Yes, I guess we can keep it."
"At least that'll be something. I'll go out now and disconnect the batteries." Roberta was leaving just as Frank, their younger brother, only 56 years, entered.
"Hi, sisters," he cried.
Roberta brushed past him without a word and walked out into the summer dusk. Frank was carrying a newspaper, which Fern immediately snatched from him. Trembling, she looked it through and through, and sighing, gave it back to him.
"Saw Doug Spaulding outside just now. Said he had a message for you. Said for you not to worry. He saw everything, and everything's all right."
"What did he mean by that?"
"I'm sure I wouldn't know."
Fern turned her back and searched for her handkerchief.
"Ah, well, these kids."
Frank looked at his sister's back for a long moment, then shrugged.
"Supper almost ready?" he asked pleasantly.
"Yes."
Fern set the kitchen table.
There was a bulbing cry from outside. Once, twice, three times. Far away. "What's that?"
Frank peered through the kitchen window into the dusk.
"What's Roberta up to? Look at her out there,
sitting in the green machine, poking the rubber horn.
Once, twice more, in the dusk, softly, like some kind of mournful animal, the bulbing sound was pinched out.
"What's got into her?" demanded Frank.
"You just leave her alone," screamed Fern.
Frank looked surprised. A moment later, Roberta entered quietly, without looking at anyone, and they all sat down to supper.